Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, February 6th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for our second day of life without football. Two guests will join me here today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and also Vegas Hockey Hotline. We're going to chat about Super Bowl 52, how things wrapped up for the sportsbooks, how things wrapped up for Brian personally in the game. And we're also going to chat some NHL betting tips, some interesting spots here tonight, some interesting spots throughout the week, and, of course, the trade deadline coming up here as well. So we'll talk about all those things with Brian. Second half of today's show, professional handicapper Tony George will join us from Doc Sports. We used to have Tony on the program. Good to get him back on today. We're going to chat some Big 12 college basketball with him. Very interesting conference. Everybody's kind of beating everybody right now. So we'll talk about some of the challenges with that. Look at tonight's two games and then also sort of rank the conference a little bit, maybe looking for some futures value there in that league. Before we get into that, over at bangthebook.com, tons of stuff going on. I actually haven't posted it yet, but my first team preview is done for Major League Baseball. Got it on good authority, as I mentioned yesterday, that we should get some MLB season win total odds here this week. So be on the lookout for that. But also over there at the website, lots of NHL, NBA, college basketball content, sportsbook reviews. You want to make sure you're checking those out. Our free contests where you can win cash prizes, our matchup data section. We are doing some site maintenance here today, so things may be a little bit slow. So just keep that in mind. Be patient with us with that. Of course, you know about that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, the number 25. $25 free bet for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here today on the program. The first, Mr. Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
All right, Adam, another day. Football's over. All right, let's see, what now? Oh, okay, let's do the Olympics. Okay, then what? Okay, let's do the World Cup. NHL, NBA, March Madness. It's not like anything stops.
No, nothing stops. And I know you and I were talking a little bit before we came on the air here about that. It is a 365-day-a-year industry for people that are in it like you and I, because even if we don't have anything specifically to host or anything to write about or anything like that, you know, we're watching games. We're still taking observations that, you know, we can use for our listeners the next day. It's a crazy industry to be a part of, man. It feels like it slows down, but it doesn't.
Well, I mean, it's even to the point where, okay, you get the baseball, you're looking for these other sidebar things. Okay, the NFL draft. Well, wait a minute. Now the NFL draft has how many trades will there be in the first round? How many guys from Alabama will go in the first? You know, you can bet on the NFL draft now, for God's sake.
Well, and something that we talk about on the show here, too. I mean, I know one of the offshores, Five Dimes, already has NFL season win totals up for 2018. But even out there at the South Point with what Chris Andrews and those guys are doing, college football season win totals are going to be up in May. You know, week one lines will be up. Some of them may already be up. And then games of the year lines come shortly thereafter. There's no off season. It just doesn't happen.
Well, the betting appetite is out there for all these things. When I first got here in 2005, I said, well, the props are such a big thing in the Super Bowl. How come we don't do props every day? And they looked at me like I had 10 heads. You know, man hours and all the work. I'm like, well, people will bet this stuff. I mean, to the point, we're doing the radio on Wednesday with Bob Scucci from New Orleans. And I said, I got a goofy question. I said, people go nuts, there's 400 props. I said, halftime for the Super Bowl is 50 minutes. I said, what if you did a prop sheet for the second half? It's not half the side and the total in the second half. What if you did Brady passing yards in the second half, or Jai rushing yards in the second half, or over-under fumbles lost or interception? He goes, that's actually pretty good. He did it. He made a 10 prop sheet, a prop sheet with 10 offerings on it for the second half, and there was like 40 minutes to bet on it. They bet it off the charts, and most people didn't even know it was going to be there. I mean, so now you can see down the road, conceivably, that's a thing that could become a thing. And then why wouldn't you do – they'll do indexes – you know, during Sunday night and Monday night football, indexes to score the first touchdown, or, you know, Brady's passing yards on a Sunday night football game. But you watch, I mean, he's talking about it. It's Now, why not on the high-profile games at the very least put up second-half props based on what you saw in the first half? I mean, this and with mobile apps and people, the convenience of, you know, sitting wherever they are, go to the app. You know it's going to be there. You know, whack away. Have a good time.
Well, one of the things that you and I talked, well, actually, we talked about that last week, about somebody offering some second-half prop betting. So I'm glad that you brought it up, and I'm glad that it was something that came to fruition. But one of the things that we've talked about throughout the NFL playoffs here is that you and I have both ranted about coaches getting conservative, about coaches just playing way too close to the vest in the fourth quarter. And I drew this comparison on yesterday's show, and I want to get your thoughts on it as a hockey guy. But one of the things that Herb Brooks talked about with his 1980 Olympic team when they were going up against the Soviets is that, you know, nobody wants to play the Soviets game back at them. People just let the Soviets come to them. They wind up getting blown out as a result. So he structured his team and used that preparation time to play like the Soviets, to play with that creativity, develop that chemistry. We all know how that turned out. Philadelphia, now this wasn't an upset of that magnitude, obviously, but Philadelphia was the aggressor. They played Patriots football. They had two significant fourth down completions significant fourth down conversions that directly led to touchdowns. I didn't care who won this football game, but man, was I thrilled to see somebody play the Patriots game back at them. And kudos to Doug Peterson for that.
And the NFL's a copycat league, and watch more people adopt that strategy now in the years to come. Full marks, everything you just said. The one thing that doesn't change, though, is the math model. And I'm telling you, if Brady doesn't get script sacked right there, and they go down and win this game, the second he did it, you missed an extra point. Who cares? You start chasing a point in the second quarter against New England, you're asking for trouble. I aggressive, yes, but I no way did I buy into him going for two because they missed an extra point. And at the end of the day, that would have been New England going down to win the game instead of tie the game. But I mean, but everything else he did, game plan, game management, the aggressive nature of going for it and that stuff, I thought was spectacular.
So as I mentioned at the top of the segment here, you host something called Sportsbook Radio. You have lots of sportsbook directors and heavy hitters on throughout the week here. What are you hearing from them about how Super Bowl 52 went at their respective shops?
Oh, it was, a record-setting handle in the state of Nevada, but it was not the result that these books wanted. The worst-case scenario is what happened. That was the Eagles winning outright and the over. So it was all the Eagles money, and they took significant bets on the Eagles on the money line. And everybody hammered the over, which meant the general public had a field day with the props because most of the guys went over on the props with the nature of the game. So at the end of the day, they held a minuscule amount. I mean, they wrote a lot, but they held a minuscule amount. So, they weren't doing a cartwheel about the result.
Yeah. Amendola goes over with 8 catches, 152 yards. We talked a lot about him in the lead up to the game. Chris Hogan was a bit of a surprise, not to you. That's somebody that you highlighted last week, but he had 6 catches for a 128 and a touchdown. Gronkowski easily went over all of his things, plus scored 2 touchdowns. Anybody that played the Gronkowski props, you made out pretty well. But let's talk about Nick Foles here for a minute. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the one I think we did talk about last week among them was the one they really didn't want to happen was James White scoring a touchdown. That was a nice plus price that got hammered down. And, this guy's just got a penchant for – the big game, the playoffs, whatever. And I think we cited on the show last week, of the 3 running backs, he was the most physical guy, which made sense, on or near the goal line. And he ripped off a long one and got in. But that was one that hurt the books.
Well, you mentioned the NFL's a copycat league, and that certainly is true. And you look at the three of the last 4 quarterbacks left standing here in the NFL playoffs. You had Tom Brady, who's obviously in a class by himself. Then you had Nick Foles, Case Keenum, and Blake Bortles. And what we've found here is that it comes down to scheme and it comes down to talent at the skill positions. And Nick Foles was phenomenal in this football game. He was absolutely terrific. His wide receivers made plays for him, obviously, but went through his progressions, didn't panic, got rid of the football, had the one turnover, but that was kind of a tip drill type pass from tip drill type play from Alshon Jeffrey. What do you think, if anything, changes in the NFL here going forward, where you had these you know, pedestrian, seemingly journeyman types of quarterbacks. You know, Bortles is a guy that's been with Jacksonville, but he doesn't really have that profile as a franchise quarterback. Foles and Keenum both would have been free agents after the year without the performances they had. So do you think things change in the NFL? I mean, do you think that the era of the elite quarterback is kind of dying?
Oh, I think it's been long dead. And part of it, to me, I will say this, is a lot of this is who's your coordinator? Who's your, you know, tip of the hat to McDaniels and Frank Reich? I mean, you know, Frank Reich's a head coach in waiting. I mean, like, hey, listen, as a Bills fan, I mean, I you know, first and goal at the one, and you throw a fade route? I mean, you know, line up and run it in the end zone, and they get an offensive pass interference call and get a field goal instead of a touchdown. A touchdown in that game wins the game. Now, I love these coordinators. I mean, to me, when I'm looking at teams, I really do. And my friend Mark Lawrence from Playbook, we do our previews in the summer. He's always talked about the value of coordinators. When Sarkisian got the head coaching job up in Washington, he spent like $3 million on his coaching staff. And that team was a monster right out of the gate. You know, don't overthink things. You're running 6 yards a carry on first down, first and goal at the nine, and you run it to the one, then the guy throws. It's like, you know, so we sit there and the quarterback gets all the blame. Somebody's offensive coordinator is like, stop overthinking stuff. It's football. Whatever happened to lining up in the eye and jumping over the pile? I mean, Fournette did that. Is about the only team in the league I ever saw to do it. The other thing that drives me nuts is short yardage situations, especially in college football. Anybody ever heard of a quarterback sneak? You know, it's fourth and 3 inches. And they get the quarterback in the shotgun, you're snapping it back 5 yards. Like, who makes this stuff up?
No, that's all completely fair. And, I mean, we're seeing now in college, San Jose State hired an offensive coordinator that was 28 years old. Lane Kiffin's got a 24-year-old OC now in Charlie Weiss Jr. So we're getting some more creativity in the coaching industry, and that's something that I really like. We're getting some of that youthful exuberance and different ways of doing things, and then you kind of work your career path up, and then you get to be, you know, you've got guys like Doug Peterson who played the game, played the quarterback position. You've got some of these other guys that were graduate assistants that become coordinators at a young age and then kind of, you know, sort of make their way up the ranks. You've got some that were born into it, like Charlie Weiss Jr., like Kyle Shanahan. You know, it's just kind of in your blood, but you know, at least there's that. I mean, I think that with all the complaints about the NFL, and there certainly are a lot of them to be made, and you know, you get a pretty nasty hit there with Brandon Cooks on the biggest stage. You get that concussion conversation drawn up again. But the game is pretty exciting now because of a lot of the creativity we have with these offensive coordinators. So do you think that, you know, a high-scoring showcase here like the Super Bowl and high-scoring games like the playoffs have been will have a pretty significant impact on the totals market for regular season games next year?
Well, I think we got to see where, you know, who goes where, what the personnel is all going to look like. And, you know, to a degree, I'd say yes. I think maybe, but, you know, what Peterson did there, it might have some trickle-down effect where, you know, some guys are more aggressive than others. I honestly, we talked about this probably a month ago, Adam, on one of the podcasts. You know, when you're looking at a game, it's offense, defense, and special teams, and I don't think that they ever take special teams into account in making a number, and that's a third of the game. And if a team's in the top three in special teams, their odds are, and they're doing well in the turnover department, they're likely winning the field position battle most weeks, and nobody ever takes that into account. I think the other thing would be, you know, do they take the coaches into account? You know, is a guy conservative? What's his penchant for going for it? The one guy you kind of know that he shoots from the hip is Belichick. Other than that, you know, nobody ever sits back and says, well, what is the coach's tendencies and what should that mean in relation to the wagering number?
I think there's a lot to figure out heading into next year. I mean, you know, we obviously had the run here where favorites did extremely well. It was one of those years where, you know, a lot of the traditional sharper, so to speak, mindsets of, you know, playing the underdogs and double-digit dogs and things of that sort, you know, maybe didn't work out as well here in the middle of the year. But I'll be curious to see what happens going forward, because you had a second-year head coach here in Doug Peterson that wins the Super Bowl. You had a first-year coach there in Sean McDermott, who you know very well, obviously, with the Bills, takes his team to the playoffs this season. And we've got a lot of coaching turnover here this year, and it feels like some of the new blood, you know, really having a lot of immediate success from a coaching standpoint. Next year could be pretty wide open.
And it's refreshing because that was the one thing with the NFL. It's an old boys network, and you would get the same batch of retreads and guys getting their second, third, fourth kick at the can, and you're seeing, you know, some of these younger, fresh faces. Look what the Rams did this year. You know, sometimes a fresh approach is, you know, it's long overdue. And maybe that's one of the biggest changes in the NFL, is that you're not just getting all these guys, these retread guys. You're maybe taking a look at some of the fresh faces. The one thing that always drives me insane is, you know, where is the outside the box thinking? I mean, is it that simple that every year, okay, who are the two teams in the Super Bowl? Oh, the four coordinators for the two participating teams. Let's interview them for head coaching jobs. Why? It's almost like it was automatically, like there's not an ounce of thinking that maybe there's some other guy somewhere else. It's just, let's just look at the guys that are in the Super Bowl. I mean, what are the Lions going to do when they introduce Patricia? Hey, here's our new head coach. Congratulations, coach, on the Super Bowl. Your defense gave up 16,000 yards in the Super Bowl. Good luck in your future here with the Lions.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's completely fair, and especially when you look at New England and what they do from a player personnel standpoint. They draft and develop well. They plug in free agents that seem to fit really well. Maybe it's a Patricia scheme thing. That's certainly a possibility, but I know there are some people out there in the Twitter handicapping community who are ready to load up against the Detroit Lions because they just don't believe in Matt Patricia. Then you see him on a big stage here with 2 weeks to prepare, and this is what you get. You see what happened last year. I mean, there was a pick six in there, but you know they were down big going into the fourth quarter of that game last year too. So,
well, they all think they're hiring Belichick. Well, they think they're hiring Belichick. And, you know, so, I mean, for how many years was there the, you know, there was the Bill Walsh tree, right? Then there was the Bill Parcells tree. And now you got the Bill Belichick tree. You got O'Brien in Houston, whatever. You know, on and on it goes. And so, basically, they think they're going to be ultimately hiring the next Belichick because they were surrounded by Belichick. The reality of it is a really good head coach, and I think Belichick is certainly much more than this. But you can be a very good coach in the league if you, A, surround yourself with good people. And the best ones are the guys that will delegate responsibilities out and say, you're in charge of this. You know, I'm gonna focus on timeouts, how to run the thing, and whether or not we go for it. But whatever I decide we're going to do, you're going to make the calls and you're going to have the personnel in there. And a lot of these guys just don't, you know, their ego won't let them delegate. You know, some of the best coaches ever were guys that delegated out responsibilities.
Well, and a tree that's adding a lot of branches here lately is the Andy Reid coaching tree, and now Doug Peterson winning the Super Bowl probably won't slow that down. So, you know, that'll be a pretty interesting one to watch going forward. I do want to ask you this here before we transition over to the NHL. Super Bowl 53 odds were out before the ink was even dry on the newspapers. I think some places even had them out before the Super Bowl was actually played. Anybody kind of off the beaten path that you're sort of thinking in terms of a pretty successful NFL season next year?
Oh, boy. I tried to take a peek at it, and I'm like, there's a lot of other fish to fry. You know, I think, you know, the Rams and the Vikings certainly make sense. Hey, listen, it's tough to repeat the NFL, but the Eagles just won this thing. If they don't get fat and happy, they just won this thing and lost the MVP. Now, you tell me when they come back from a motivation perspective, the one guy that's got to be motivated is Carson Wentz.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And they're the team that's keeping, you know, the entire band together as far as coaching goes. Unless Jim Schwartz, you know, somehow gets grabbed for one of these jobs somewhere, you know, if McDaniels doesn't take the Colts job or whatever happens there. But, I mean, they're bringing back Peterson.
I'll throw one at you, Adam. I'll throw one at you. Right. I mean, Houston, with that defense, I think they would have been a mitful for people if Deshaun Watson hadn't got hurt. I mean, their season literally, it just ended. The day Watson got hurt, it ended. But he was doing some pretty good things. Now, I mean, it's still a leap of faith that this guy's going to come back, keep doing what he was doing, or take the step forward, not have a sophomore change. Failed miserably at the end of the year, and maybe people would just kind of forget what they were actually doing. But I think Houston, if Watson had been playing, they'd have made the playoffs, and I don't think that would have been a team anybody would have wanted to play.
No, I think that's a real good one, and one that we'll definitely take a deeper focus on here as we go throughout the summer months. But Brian, let's transition over to the NHL here for a couple of minutes. And this is a game that I'm very, very interested in. I know you are as well. It's a game I know you talked about yesterday on Vegas Hockey Hotline. I'm sure you'll do it here again today. The Golden Knights are in Pittsburgh. Marc-Andre Fleury making his return to the Steel City. Me, personally, I look at that as being a detriment here for Vegas tonight. Do you look at it in the same way, or do you think that it's something that motivates them, much like a lot of these situations here have throughout the season?
There are so many different things in play here that would keep me a million miles away from this game. One, Vegas currently is not playing like they've been playing. And they're 3-1 on the most grisly road trip that anyone in the league had to go through. They played 4 games in 5.5 days, had a miraculous comeback against Calgary, and then beat the Caps on Super Bowl Sunday. They're 3-1 on a road trip, and they're not the way they've been playing, they're not playing well. Part of the reason they're not playing well started with the Islanders game before the road trip. And I think it's funny, you were earlier talking about, the Eagles played the Patriots game. Teams, you can see it. First of all, it's the time of the year in the NHL. But specific to Vegas, since the Islanders game, like 5 games ago, teams are playing a 1-3-1 neutral zone trap against these guys. They are flat out saying, we can't play with these guys in a track meet hockey game. So they're taking their transition game away. Now, Vegas is capable of playing the forecheck game. So I think they've got to make an adjustment where right out of the gate, knowing what teams are going to do, they've just got to employ the dump and chase strategy early and get a lead, force the other team to come from behind where defensemen are going to have to pinch and they're going to have to open things up, and then their transition game will be fine. But it is like readily apparent to me watching this, teams are just saying, we can't go up and down the ice with these guys. And teams are taking themselves out of their own game to try to slow Vegas down. So it's this weird dynamic. As for the game tonight, Fleury's going to be ridiculously emotional. And they would say, oh, boy, it's going to be a tough one. I would say this, the Golden Knights collectively as a group, if this guy, and he's no spring chicken, if he plays well, I think the Golden Knights are going to skate through walls for him tonight. And I think it's as big a distraction as it is for Pittsburgh because they love this guy. And the fans in the stands love the guy. So it's not going to be one of these things. It's a regular season game. So it's like not the end of the world. Well, although the Penguins are struggling right now. I just think this is a really weird thing for both teams. And when I look at it, the most motivated guy on the ice is Fleury.
No, that's true. And I mean, Fleury's talked about this a lot, and I'm sure he was asked about this, when you were looking ahead at the road trip, because this is a circled type of spot for them. This is a team that when they played Florida in both those games for head coach Gerard Gallant, they played very well. They've done it for, when they played Columbus, they did it for William Karlsson. They've done it for these guys because as we've talked about before, this is a patchwork roster of guys that were, I don't want to say cast offs because that's not the right way to put it, but guys that were taken in an expansion draft format, guys that were unprotected by their previous teams. So, when they
say
go
it
into a lot of these types of games, they have chips on their shoulders.
Say it. Call them cast-offs, because that's what they're calling themselves, misfits. You know how any team, if they can get bulletin board material or grab that us against the world or the media or nobody thought we were going to win, teams rally around stuff like that. They're embracing it. So go ahead and call them cast-offs. Because that's what they're calling themselves. It's pretty special, and it's nuts. I mean, I would even say, and the other thing, I could sit here, we could do a 2-hour podcast on this hockey team, why this has worked. So many of them are free agents in contract years. The other one little thing, that it was like a month into the season, and it was so on display on Sunday, it was unbelievable. And it was Nate Schmidt particularly who I posed the question to. I said, what's it like every time you go to play a team? I'm like, you're actually getting like a scouting report in the room because there's a guy in the room that played with those guys who – so every night you've got a guy giving you a scouting report. This guy does that. This guy's tendency is this. So they actually get little scouting reports in the room. Sunday, we've watched Ovechkin for how many years, as great a player as he is. He comes in on the off wing on the left side. He gets inside the blue line, and he makes that cut to center ice into a shooting position. Nate Schmidt, it was like he was laughing at him. Schmidt played more minutes than anybody. First time he went back to play Washington. Ovechkin did that move on Nate Schmidt four or five times. And Schmidt just poke checked it away every time. He made him look foolish. It's like, Schmidt's seen that move 6,000 times before in practice. And they get those little kind of things with every team they play. You think Fleury's not in that room tonight saying, as great as he is, watch for Crosby to do this. Malkin might do this. Here's his tendency. Hey, when something goes back to the point, you know, just be leery. You know, this is a situation where Letang may pinch. Or here's a chance where if you can get, you know, chip it off the dasher, you can get around Letang, and here's a two-on-one. I mean, they got all these things going on in the room every day.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's almost like a roster full of coaches when you talk about playing the former teams that these guys have. Now, I'll ask you this, though. I mean, tonight's game obviously is one that has a lot of baggage to it and a lot of things that are, you know, maybe a little bit difficult to try and quantify. Thursday's game against San Jose is one that sets up very interesting for both teams. San Jose, first game back off a long road trip. Vegas, first game back in Pacific time, and then they'll head back home and get back on home ice over the weekend. That's a game that's just full of handicapping angles as well.
Yeah, I listen, the one thing is, especially here, you know, Vegas is inflated or deflated, as the case may be tonight, where, you know, Pittsburgh is a, you know, 20-25 cent favorite, the total on the game six. Yeah, the San Jose thing, it's the end of a road trip in Vegas. Here's a quirk. They get to fly over Vegas on the way to San Jose. I mean, they fly by home to go play that one. It doesn't seem to matter who it is. And now everybody keeps waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, McPhee, they did an interview with McPhee in Washington on his return there. And I think the next 3 weeks are going to be so interesting in terms of one of the most interesting stories. What will George McPhee do at the trade deadline? You know, sometimes, they want to build for the future, obviously. He's got the unrestricted free agents in Neal and Perron. What do you do with these guys? You don't want assets going out the door for nothing. It looks like they're not going anywhere. But he said every team has needs. If you don't think you have needs, then you're getting complacent. I mean, I'd look for him to – sometimes it's the little auxiliary move you make that actually puts a team over the top. Well, I think he goes and gets him a third-line piece of the puzzle and maybe another defenseman. And it's got to fit in the room from a chemistry perspective. But, you know, you can sit idly by and go, oh, well, we're happy with what we're doing and the season's a win. Or you go make a little move and the guy say, hey, he believes in us. He thinks we can win this whole thing. And then these two auxiliary pieces come in and they take another step forward.
Going back to tonight's action here, there's a game that I'm kind of focused on a little bit, and that's Calgary and Chicago. And one of the angles that I like to play is once a team ends a losing streak, I like to back them in that next game. And Calgary actually plays Chicago, the team that they just beat over the weekend, to end that losing streak. And the Blackhawks are only 4 points out of the playoffs right now, but they've got some significant issues going on with this team. You know, Brent Seabrook, it seems like the aging curve has finally hit him. Corey Crawford's back to practicing, but he has got post-concussion symptoms, so we'll see how quickly they can get him back into the mix. I don't know, man. I feel like I really like Calgary here tonight, and it makes me kind of wonder, you know, what the outlook should be going forward for a team like Chicago.
Well, they got to get a goalie. I mean, so they better figure out real quick what's going on with Corey Crawford, whether he really, you know, skating is one thing. We watched Fleury after the concussion skate here for a month. You know, skating is one thing, being cleared to play is another. And until they get a read on that situation, they're going nowhere with Glass. I mean, they've got to get a goaltender. And even if they get Crawford back, they may still be going nowhere because the depth of the West, you look at the standings, all these teams are so far over 500. And, you know, even though Calgary had that losing streak after the ridiculous winning streak, you know, the funny thing was they were getting points in virtually all those games. They were losing those games, but they were losing in overtime.
Yeah, definitely. And Calgary's a team that I actually kind of like long-term here because I think they sort of set up – I mean, Mike Smith is – say what you will about him. He's a guy that faced a ton of shots in Arizona and kept them in a lot of games for the most part. But they've got
you
that star power.
He's the guy. He's the guy. I'm with you. I like
they're
Mike
a
Smith.
Fun team to me. You know, they've got guys like Johnny Hockey. They've got Monahan. They've got Tkachuk. They got Giordano in the back. They've got guys that can play. I think they're a really dangerous team for whoever they run into in the playoffs.
Well, and you know what I like about them is they've got a nice mix of skill and grit. I mean, Tkachuk is one of those guys. When you go in the draft, well, do I get the guy that can score 45 goals or do I get a guy like Tkachuk? In their own way, they both have, you know, market value. I for the postseason, when they get in, I want to see this kid play. I mean, single-handedly, he's got Drew Doughty's head spinning. You know, whenever the Flames play the Kings, he's got Doughty so far off his game, and the guy can finish, but he's a nuisance and he's a pest, and he'll knock you through the wall. I would even say to you, a game tonight to watch. I couldn't even tell you why this is the case, but it's been going on 5 years. I'm going to be sitting here with two TVs on tonight, Anaheim and Buffalo. As pitiful as Buffalo is, and Anaheim, this is almost a must-win game for them because that's a team that's constructed for the playoffs. I'm more worried about them getting in. If they get in, I think Anaheim's dangerous, and they gave up 7 goals last night in Toronto. I think Anaheim bounces back with a good effort. At the moment, Buffalo couldn't shoot it into the ocean. But these two teams hate each other. And you're like, what? Of all the matchups, for the last 5 years, the two games when Anaheim and Buffalo play, it's a flat-out brawl. Something happened somewhere. I mean, I'm telling you, you watch tonight. That game, these two teams cannot stand each other. And it's like a powder keg. I'll be watching that one closely.
Make sure to talk next week, see if we get any activity between now and then, is the trade deadline and how that affects some of these teams. Brian did pre- and post-game coverage for the Buffalo Sabres for a while, so he's been around the room during that period of time, so we'll get some insights from him on that on next week's show. But Brian, as I mentioned, you're the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people tune in for those two programs?
Yeah, it's KSHP.com, AM 1400, Sportsbook Radio, noon to 1 Pacific time, and Vegas Hockey Hotline from 1 to 2. Today on the hockey show, Steve Karp's the beat writer for the Review Journal. He's in Pittsburgh, and it's a circus act there, so he'll be joining us from Pittsburgh, so we'll have a really good preview for that Golden Knights-Penguins game.
And for our listeners, make sure you check out Brian Blessing's free pick videos over at bangthebook.com, and also follow him on Twitter at Brian Blessing. Brian, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, buddy, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, have a great week.
Great stuff there with Brian Blessing. Love talking some hockey on the program with him. And, he'll be a very valuable resource for us here as we do get closer to the trade deadline and then start to look ahead to that playoff push where, every point just becomes so critical. It's good to get some hockey talk here on the show. That's for sure. One more guest here for this Tuesday edition of the program. That is Tony George from Doc Sports. Tony, how's it going today, man?
Been a while, Adam. Going good. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very well. Has been a while. Good to get you back here on the program. We're going to chat some Big 12 college basketball. And, Tony, before we talk specifically about the Big 12, now that the Super Bowl has passed, a lot of people turning their focus towards college basketball. They want to make sure that they've got some skin in the game, all the action junkies that we know are out there. What are some really basic college basketball betting tips you'd pass along for our listeners?
Well, one of them's low volume. Keep it low, College basketball is extremely volatile, even in the top 10, just look at the rankings. I mean, Nova's kind of beating up on everybody, but at the end of the day, there's probably 10 or 12 teams that can win it all this year. A lot of the conferences, even the small conferences, there's only one or two games separating the top, three or four teams, and there's a lot of parity. You want to maybe look at small conferences like I do, Mo Valley, the MAC, you make Conference USA, a lot of home road dichotomies, where, road teams just don't fare well in small conferences. You want to kind of pick and choose your spots. And I put out usually 5 games on Saturday, and during the week, I just find the best bet of the day and I bet it. I put it out and I bet it, or maybe 3 games max and kind of flat bet them. And if you haven't been doing it, you want to ease into it slowly because it's highly volatile. There's not a night that goes by that you're not sitting there scratching your head going, how the hell did that just happen? So you want to be real careful. And, of course, if you're just jumping in, Adam, there's a lot of trends to go off of. There's a lot of hot teams right now ATS-wise. There's a lot of teams you need to start fading a little bit now down the stretch as well that aren't doing that well ATS that might have a big name. So, you look at those stats and go from that point. But I would say keep the volume low, flat bet it. And sounds boring, but that's how you turn a profit in college basketball.
No, and I like to hear that. I mean, we've got some guys here on the show that are high-volume handicappers. We have some guys that are very selective and do play a lower volume and look to capitalize on what they feel are the biggest edges, where you know, a big edge is a big edge, and for some people, a lot of small edges add up to a big edge. So I think that's a good point to make here right out of the chute in terms of low volume and then flat betting, of course, you know, being something that's a pretty good strategy for those that are diving in. And I think something that was nice about last night, I know you had a good winner on last night's card, is that for that first Monday of college basketball coming out of the Super Bowl, we only had 7 line games. So you really had no choice but to keep a low volume.
Yeah, you know, last night it was I put out a free play. I'm a big, you know, we're going to talk Big 12. I concentrate on the Big 12 and the Mo Valley a lot. Probably 60% of my plays come out of those two conferences, specialization being the key to success. But I didn't see anything on the board last night I liked. I thought the Syracuse game was a setup. They haven't been able to score. They're catching points against a really good defensive team in Louisville, and yet they put up over 70 and they win. You know, I mean, it was a crazy night. I had last night, you know, we did real well in we passed in college basketball, gave out a free play. I'll tell people how they can get those free plays daily. We do them on YouTube. But nonetheless, we didn't take a game in college basketball last night, so I switched gears to the NBA. We've been hot in the NBA, hit 12 out of 17 here in the NBA, and I've been playing some NBA totals plays last night. But last night we took the Utah Jazz in a big winner. But, you know, when it's low volume like that, and there's only 7 or 8 line games, if you don't see something you like or you can't find an angle, don't take it. And that's the point you're making, is with only 7 or 8 line games on the board, the lines are going to be extremely sharp and there's just not a lot of value.
No, there isn't. But then you look at a card tonight, like Tuesday night's card, and you know, we've got a much more significant number of games. Like we got about 30 or 40 or so out there on the board. And I like what you mentioned early on, is that, you know, for those that don't know, you are somebody that lives in the Midwest. So conference specialization, something that you preach, something that we talk about with our listeners here on the show as well. And, you know, as you said, I mean, you focus on the Big 12, you focus on the Missouri Valley. It's the area you know. It's the area where you get, you know, some of that beat writer type of coverage that, you know, can possibly uncover some of those edges for you.
Yeah, it's true. And I've been doing national radio on SB Nation Radio, Yahoo Sports Radio, and Sirius for the last 14 years. And, you know, so, and a lot of that on, I was 8 years on ESPN up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I lived there on a local station, and we talked to almost every coach and SID director and everything else in the Big 12 and all the sports writers. And even when the Mo Valley, we covered the Mo Valley because Creighton was in Omaha at the time. I used to host the Dana Altman show. He's at Oregon now, but we always had Dana Altman on once a week for a half hour to talk about Mo Valley action when he was at Creighton. And all these sports writers from these conferences I have relationships with, and I do text and email them from time to time, especially with these injuries that says questionable, you know. And that's one thing you really need to look at, too, is the injuries right now, and especially with this flu bug going around all over the country. It's been brutal. You'll see a lot of players out due to illness, and there's a lot of that going on right now in college basketball. These guys are around each other, and it can ravage a team. I know Indiana State one time here about 3 weeks ago suited up 7 players for a game because everybody had the flu. I mean, so you know, those little things you got to look at. But knowing those conferences like you do, you can research those things and, you know, have a finite number of games versus an infinite number of games, you know, on the board. And it's a lot easier to handicap and kind of sharpen your power ratings on for your overlays.
Well, and that's another thing, too. I mean, you talk about conference specialization, and as much as you can hate social media for a variety of different reasons, there's a lot of value to it as well when it comes to getting news and the immediacy of getting news. And if you specialize in a conference, you put together a list of the beat writers in that conference, you're going to find out that type of stuff of, you know, teams got the flu, or I know there's some bad weather moved through Iowa yesterday, and it's going through Indiana and Illinois here today. And you know, sometimes you get those types of things. They can cause some travel headaches, some travel delays. That'll throw a team off as well. You know, so if you specialize and you don't have, you know, 351 teams worth of info to look through, you can find some of those edges. And those are things that are very important in a lot of different ways. Let's talk about the Big 12 here, Tony, because you've got a conference where every team has lost at least 3 conference games so far, and it's only February 6th. 2 teams, Texas Tech and Kansas, have lost 3. West Virginia's lost four. Oklahoma, Kansas State, and Texas have all dropped five, and then on down from there. Is it a challenge for you to handicap a conference like this where everybody just kind of beats everybody?
Yeah, it's all about scheduling spots, you know, and knowing the home road dichotomies of these teams. And you know, early on, it was very difficult to handicap because you didn't know what you were going to get on any given night from any team. And until they've established an identity and develop some chemistry, either offensively or defensively, on what their strength was going to be, it was a total crapshoot. Now, I put out my last six Big 12 games I put out that were premium plays. I've cashed them all, and I had Oklahoma State this Saturday catching 12 at Kansas. I thought they would give them a ball game. I will go ahead and be facetious in the fact to say I didn't think they could beat them straight up. But never say never in college basketball, but I didn't see that really coming as much as I did they were going to give them a ball game, just because Kansas, you know, when you think of Big 12, you think of Kansas, and they've won, what, 12 or 13 championships in a row in the regular season, and Bog Allen and the mystique surrounding all that, and, you know, they're just like Kentucky. Every year they lose great players to the NBA draft, and they just reload, and you know, like Alabama in football or Nebraska in football back in the 90s, didn't matter who they lost, they just were going to come out and kick everybody's ass again the next year. It's not that way this year in Kansas. Kansas is not a team that you should lay double digits with this year. They don't really have a true ball-handling guard. They miss Frank Mason a ton. He really ran that team for them last year. And Kansas is not excellent in any single category. Like they usually, they're not good at free throws. They're sloppy on defense at times. They get lazy on the boards. Graham is their scorer, but, you know, they got maybe two, three guys off the bench that come in and rotate that are decent, but can't carry a game. And you know what? This year, Fog Allen is not near the, you know, the most intimidating place to go in and play. You know, they had Washington went in there and beat them as a double-digit underdog. They played in Kansas City, and Arizona State beat them, you know, which is even bigger a home crowd than Fog Allen. But, you know, if you're hanging your hat on Kansas this year, you know, there's a lot of teams in this conference. There's four teams that can win this conference this year.
Well, and that's the thing for Kansas. I mean, sometimes they'd go 3 years and lose three games at Fog Allen. They've already dropped three at Fog Allen here so far this year. So, as you mentioned, you think there's about four teams that can win the Big 12, at least in the regular season, and we'll see what happens when we get to the conference tournament. How would you rate these teams? Because, as I mentioned, everyone with at least three losses, you got Baylor and Oklahoma State, who are both 3-7 in conference play. If you're ranking this thing 1 through 10, what sort of order do you think you put it in?
Well, I'd have to – I think when it all comes down to it, at the end of the day, it's really a toss-up to me between Kansas and West Virginia. And West Virginia hit a rough spell there, you know, here about a couple weeks ago. They dropped some games, a huge win for them last night on the road at Oklahoma. Oklahoma's a real tough team. Obviously, Oklahoma coming off a very physical game against Texas. Texas is one of those grind it out, slow it down, make you earn every point. Their pace of play and tempo was very low, you know, and then they lost that game, which is a, you know, border rivalry, and then had to come back home and play West Virginia. But West Virginia, when they start playing defense and stay disciplined, they're one of the toughest teams around to beat. It's obviously very tough to beat them in Morgantown. Kansas State, who's my sleeper in this conference, found that out on Saturday, and that makes that win even more impressive last night, was they had just played Saturday and had to travel from Morgantown, which is a real pain in the butt to travel to and travel out of, to go on the road, you know, in a, you know, 2 days and beat Oklahoma and Trae Young. But I think West Virginia is one of those teams with Kansas tied number one. Texas Tech, interesting because they're the only team that's undefeated at home in this conference, and they're well coached. They got a good team. They're a four loss team. You know, I'd rank them tight second, third, tight in there. Oklahoma, I actually will put Kansas State up in front of Oklahoma. I know Oklahoma's got Trae Young, but they tend from time to time to rely on him way too much. They don't play a good half-court offense. You know, Oklahoma's good on the run. Young will dish it off, you know, and penetrate this, that, and the other. He doesn't shoot all the time, but he's there. If he doesn't have 30 points, they have trouble beating people. So, you know, the top four or five there, I'd put Kansas, West Virginia, Texas Tech, probably K-State. They're just sneaky good on defense. And, you know, another one, too, then you're looking at Texas and TCU in there tossing around. Even though Oklahoma State beat Kansas, they got a big game tonight against Baylor, a big revenge game tonight against Baylor. That's an interesting game. That's my top play of the day on my premium card is that game. I won't talk a lot about that. But, you know, it's a conference where you throw out Baylor and Iowa State. They're the two bottom feeders. And I probably would take Baylor over Iowa State. But at the end of the day, you know, you throw out Baylor and Iowa State and any of the other, you know, eight teams that are playing each other, Adam, anybody can beat anybody, especially if Kansas and West Virginia is on the road.
I don't know if you're a big futures guy, but I know you're talking a lot about the home road dichotomy here in the Big 12. And obviously some of these teams just clearly play better at home. And this is a conference that's, you know, been pretty notorious for this type of thing. You know, when Iowa State was pretty good, Hilton Coliseum was just a horror show for a lot of teams. Oklahoma State generally plays well in Stillwater. Fog Allen obviously stands on its own. Morgantown's a tough place to get to. And this has been a conference that's been, you know, pretty well known for home court advantages. But as I mentioned, there's a conference where everybody's kind of eating everybody. It's just sort of the way things are setting up here. So from a futures standpoint, would you rather trust teams out of the Big 12 where, you know, they're clearly battle tested, they're playing that type of, you know, back and forth schedule versus something like the Big 10 where Purdue is clearly the best team in the league. Ohio State's pretty surprising, you know, Michigan State will be good, but you know, the conference as a whole isn't overly strong, or maybe the ACC where Virginia is a perfect 11-0. Everybody else has at least three losses. So similar to the Big 12. Do you feel like that regular season gauntlet sets up better for March Madness than, you know, being the best team in a marginal conference?
I think it is early. You know, I think Kansas will probably do well in the tournament first couple of rounds. It's when they get deep into it and really face a quality team, they're probably going to struggle. I think Kansas is possibly a Sweet 16 team this year, but they can be beat up on the outside by good shooting teams. But, you know, one thing I look at is away records when it comes to Power 5 conferences and how teams did on the road. And there's no question that Kansas has got a 6-1, you know, true road game, not talking neutral floors here, but they're 6-1 on the road and they're 2-1 on neutral floors, puts them at 80%. You know, straight up on the road, which bodes well when you're away from home and you don't have the friendly confines of an absolute pandemonium, you know, Fog Allen, Cameron Indoor, you know, those type of arenas where they're just almost impossible to beat. But going on the road and doing that, that's one thing I look at. If you look down the Big 12 right now, there's only three teams that have a winning road record: Kansas State, West Virginia, and Oklahoma. Even Texas Tech, who sits up tied at the conference, 14-0 at home, 3-3 away from home, and 2-1 on neutral floors. So, you know, I tend to look for teams that you know, whenever you get in the big dance, you want teams that have been very successful at a high rate winning on the road. And succinctly put, when you're looking at postseason action, Adam, in the NIT, most of the teams that were on the bubble or have 20 wins or 19 wins that are in the NIT, if you look at all their losses, 90% of them were on the road. And remember, the NIT, that's a home road series. That's not neutral floors until you get to Madison Square Garden at the Final Four. So I always have a lot of success in the NIT tournament fading teams, even with a good record, that maybe a team that has a lesser record, but they're on the road playing that team. And I take a lot of home teams in the NIT early on, and you find a lot of advantages there because the teams that are in that thing could win on the road or they would have been in the big dance.
We'll talk about tonight's couple of games in a second, but I do want to ask you about this. There are some people out there that like to subscribe to the zigzag theory, and for those that don't know what that is, if a team wins against the spread, you fade them the next night. If they lose against the spread, you go back on them. some people do subscribe to that type of theory. And it's something that, you know, I'm sort of wondering about here with regards to the Big 12, because as I mentioned, it is that everybody kind of beats everybody type of league. So is that something that you would, you know, would give any thought to here in this conference, or is that just something that, you know, it's just kind of outdated and doesn't really work anymore?
It's a wives' tale, in my opinion. A lot of guys subscribe to it. I know a couple of guys talk about it a lot during, you know, the NIT tournament or the tournament games or this, that, and the other. I don't subscribe to it. It's right here, right now for me. You know, I base basically 80% of my thought process in terms of picking winners, finding overlays against the spread, meaning I have a set power rating and team A and team B, and whatever the difference is between those two teams, say it's 4 points, and then the spread is 8, you know, you have a 4-point overlay on that. And that's, you know, I don't put these theories and algorithms and stuff like that, and people researched it. And, you know, that used to work, you know, years ago, but anymore, it just hasn't panned out for people, and I would avoid it at all costs.
All right, let's touch on that game here tonight. We'll start, or the two games here tonight. We'll start with Baylor and Oklahoma State. And, you know, like I said, I know that you've got a big play on this game tonight, so we're not going to talk specifically about the matchup and the edges that, you know, could possibly be there in this one. But as I look at KenPom, you've got Baylor as 46. You've got Oklahoma State as 66. Oklahoma State 4-6 in conference play. Baylor 3-7 in conference play. One of the things that we've been talking about a little bit more here on the show, now that we're into the month of February, is that you have these teams that are at the bottom of their respective conferences. So they know that their best path into the NCAA tournament is to just win the conference tournament. And sometimes that leads to a little bit of complacency with the remaining regular season games. Now, for these two teams, it certainly behooves them to go out here and win some of these games, strengthen that tournament profile. So, you know, are you sort of looking at this game tonight as a situation where, you know, both teams have that sense of urgency, give that max type of effort? And are those the games that you do look to isolate here at this time of the year?
Yeah, you tend to look for that. You know, this is a winner-take-all deal here tonight, I think, between Baylor and Oklahoma State. You got to be a little concerned if you're either way. I'll try not to give away what I'm doing here, but, you know, Oklahoma State is off a huge win, you know. But one thing about that win against Kansas, and that's a game that I went to in person. I live in Kansas City. I drove over to Lawrence, went to this game. Oklahoma State was in charge of that game from the opening tip-off. It wasn't one of those we hung around, it was a last-second thriller. Actually, the ending of the game was pretty much anticlimactic. I think Kansas drew within 5, maybe 3, and then, you know, but they were never I never felt that Oklahoma State was threatened in that game, even late at Fog Allen. They did a nice job. Smith had a nice game for him. Oklahoma State's well coached. On the other side of the coin, too, here, Oklahoma State has not beaten Baylor since 2015. Baylor's had their number, but Baylor, this team here, scares you a lot. They're pretty tough at home, but Baylor is the type of team, it's not the Baylor team of years past, where they were long, they had a bunch of 6'8" guys that could run the floor like gazelle and just drop threes on you like it's raining outside. You know, it's just ridiculous. They don't have that team this year. And they struggled in a lot of games. I'm not putting a lot of stock into the fact that they beat Iowa State 81-67, you know, at home on Saturday, because they've only won 2 games out of their last 10. They've been getting their ass kicked in Big 12 action. And, of course, Oklahoma State's only won 1 game out of their last 4, but they went through a gauntlet of TCU at home. A game they didn't shoot well in. They lost at Arkansas in the SEC Big 12 Challenge, and they lost at Texas Tech by 5. And they did beat Oklahoma in overtime in that game where Young had 50-some points and he still lost. And they also, remember, they played Baylor, got beat by 16 at Baylor back on the 15th of January.
See, but again, this is one of those spots where you look at Oklahoma State and you say, okay, well, they had what could be a season-saving victory with that win at Kansas, because they had dropped 3 in a row, 4 of their last 5. And, you know, sometimes it's kind of hard to follow up that type of prosperity. And I think that that's a pretty good segue into the other game here tonight between TCU and Kansas, is that for TCU, you know, I mean, this is a team that they're 25th in KenPom. They have a pretty solid tournament resume. But at the same time, if you fall to 4-7 in Big 12 play, you only have so many chances to get back up to a respectable record. You know, maybe you win a game or two in the conference tournament and you strengthen your tournament resume in that respect. But for Oklahoma State, that's a game you put everything into over the weekend against Kansas because you know you need that game to strengthen your resume. TCU is kind of in a similar position here tonight, but they're taking on a Kansas team that just lost at home. They traditionally don't lose at Phog Allen. They're a 7.5-point favorite tonight. I think that's my favorite thing about the Big 12 here this year, and you mentioned this already. You like to look at a lot of those situational handicapping elements. This game is chock full of them.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of a scary situation. You'd look at TCU who lost this weekend against Texas Tech, and what you're going to find out is they in that game against Texas Tech, you know, TCU shot 49% from the floor, 50% from three-point range, out-rebounded Texas Tech, and still lost. So, I mean, that you kind of take a look at that and you wonder, you know, what they played about as good as they could. They couldn't get over on Texas Tech, you know, and that was at home. But at the end of the day here, I have not had a lot of luck this year laying points with Kansas. Kansas is a team you want to take when the line is 3 or 4 points. You start laying big numbers with Kansas this year, and they just cannot put people away, especially late in games. And I think there's a lot of value in the spread tonight for TCU. You know, I know, well, Kansas lost at Phog Allen, you know, so that means the next game they're just going to stomp the crap out of the next team that walks in there. They're going to be a sacrificial lamb. That's not the case here. This was a 4-point ball game last time they played, and it was a hell of a ball game that could have went either way. And, you know, TCU, they score a lot of points on the road. They score 83 points on the road this year, shoot 49% from the floor. They hit a high percentage of their almost 75% of their free throws here. Now, both these teams, if you look at the last 5-game stats, and that's one thing you need to do when you're handicapping games, don't do season-long stats. Do the last 5. Basketball's very cyclical. Teams get in sync, either good sync or bad sync, you know, into a cycle, you know. Like West Virginia got in a bad cycle here a couple weeks ago. Now they're snapping out of it. But the stats, the last 5 games for these two teams are dead even. You know, and the one thing, too, you want to remember, Kansas down the stretch has a lot of problems this year, you know, knocking down free throws. And that, you know, that's a momentum changer. The front end of a one-on-one, you miss. The other team rebounds, goes down and scores. That's a 3 or 4-point flip over maybe what it should have been. But any more than that, I think this game tonight is going to be a very good basketball game. I think Kansas is going to score some points here. At home, TCU is getting up 83 on the road. Probably the best value in this game tonight, over 156. I see it drop down to 155.5 right now at CG Technology in Vegas and a couple of spots offshore as well. But the over, TCU, the last 30 games, 22-8 on the over. And in Big 12 play, their last 13 Big 12 games, 11-2 on the over. And Kansas doesn't play that great a defense. I think you'll find some value tonight in this game at over 155.5.
Well, I think this game is a perfect microcosm of what we opened up the segment with in terms of people now just kind of coming to college basketball, just sort of trying to find their sea legs a little bit now that the NFL is gone. Because you have this Kansas team that, you know, we traditionally think of as this big powerhouse, and they've already lost 3 games at home, as we've already talked about. TCU is an afterthought of a team. For the longest time, they just weren't very good. Jamie Dixon has this program going in the right direction. They've had some nice wins this year. You know, you go out there and you look at the line and you think, okay, well, Phog Allen's probably 4, 4.5 points worth of home court advantage, something like that. And if you're somebody that's new to college basketball, it's going to blow your mind that on a neutral, TCU would be a 3, 3.5 point type of dog here. But again, that speaks to how inconsistent Kansas has been, how many problems they've had. And for those that are just kind of diving into college basketball a little bit now that the NFL is over, those are the types of context clues that you want to look for out there in the market. Maybe Kansas wins this game going away. Maybe it's a get-right game for them coming off of the home loss. But again, you want to try to use the markets to evaluate, you know, what the stock prices are in these teams.
Yeah, you know, and those of you that are just coming in that were big football bettors, and hopefully y'all had Philadelphia. I didn't. I won all my prop bets, but couldn't win the side play in the Super Bowl, but for lack of a better term. But, you know, you start looking at these marquee teams like Duke, Kansas, Michigan State. You know, in Michigan State, obviously, you got their win record's unbelievable. Like Villanova, they're not the – but their spread records are not the same. And but these big-name teams here, I mean, you look this last weekend, Kansas, Duke goes down to a team that lost 11 straight games as 11-point favorite on the road at St. John's. You don't want to look at these marquee names. If you're looking at marquee names and you're laying marquee numbers, you're going to end up with an empty wallet pretty quick, Adam.
Well, Tony George, good to get you back on the program here today. You can follow Tony on Twitter at TGeorgeSports. As I mentioned at the top of the segment here, you're now part of the Docs Sports Network. What's going on over there right now?
Well, yeah, I joined Docs back in July exclusively. I was on my own forever and part of another network, and I've been doing this 26 years, and Wade's been a friend of mine forever that runs Docs. They got great customer service over there, and everything's guaranteed and 100% transparent, but you know, you guys that visit bangthebook.com, see my video. I do weekend videos for Bang the Book over there. Myself, I think Brian Blessing does some as well, who I followed here, which was always a tough act to follow. Brian's a great guy. But nonetheless, I do videos each and every day online at YouTube, Adam, and I've been doing them since I started at Docs. We do a daily free play video, 106 and 60, since I started with free plays. That's 64%. You go over to YouTube every day, just type in DocSports/Tony George, search it, and you'll get a video free play from me every day, and I tell you what's on deck over at the website every day there at DocSports.com.
Well, like I said, you can follow Tony on Twitter at TGeorgeSports. Tony George, appreciate your time. Good to get you back here on the program. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Oh, looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on again, Adam.
Much appreciated. Thank you so much for joining me here today, Tony, and good to get him back on the show. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Also, Wes Reynolds. We're going to do some college basketball, some NBA, and some golf stuff with the Pebble Beach Pro-Am here this weekend on tomorrow's show. Thursday, Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels. I'm sure we'll find a way to work college football in with Brad. We'll talk college basketball with both of those guests on Thursday. And we'll see what's in store for Friday. I'll see if I can get some guests here to join us as we wrap up this week on Bang the Book Radio. That's it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Wednesday.